Welcome to Hour 1. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 4B, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios South, where we alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenating radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it working? We have today with us Dan and Katie Green from Scotland, and we have also with us from Missouri, or Missouri, as they say locally, we have our resident attorney, Randy England. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org, BIPCOT.org. So, Randy, this is your first time on the radio with Dan and Katie. Dan and Katie, your first time with Randy. I'd like to introduce you. And we will.
I've been listening to Dan and Katie in preparation for doing this show with them. I wanted to be able to understand Dan.
Quite right.
Katie, I'm pretty good on, and Dan, I'm getting pretty close. So
do you have your?
That's me, all I could ask for.
Do you have your Ozark to Scottish dictionary ready?
I have it open on the screen in front of me. It's just one of the tabs on my browser, and we're ready to go.
So we were
sometimes
talking.
It is difficult to understand other.
Yeah, it is.
I interrupted you. I apologize. Please continue.
That's okay. Oh, I should mention we're bouncing the signal off satellites and around almost around the world, halfway around the world. So if it's in and out and kind of choppy, it's because satellites are slow and not all of our connections are wired, hardwired connections. So it's like if you're watching CNN or you're watching the Weather Channel or something like that, or the BBC even. Whenever someone's at a remote location, there's always a delay between the people at the home location and the remote location. So that's what we're dealing with here, except that FiendPhone is so much better than what they use at CNN or whatever that we have much less of a latency, much less of a lag in our communication. Mm-hmm. So before we started the show, at the top of the hour, we were chatting about the difference in accents, and I had said that I can kind of tell the difference in some parts of England where the accent comes from. And Katie and Dan, you guys were talking about the different English accents from over there.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, like, I couldn't tell the difference between, I think I've said this before, but I couldn't tell the difference between sort of American and Canadian accents until, like, I met Katie because she's from Canada and then actually went to Canada.
And but it's the ones in England are so much more different. Like, if you really, really listen to them, a sort of London accent and a Liverpool accent, I think Randy was saying, like, where the Beatles are from and stuff, like, that's so different.
Yeah, they are really different because we can totally hear the sort of difference. And I think sometimes maybe, like, we probably have tinges to our accents because, like, you're from Canada and stuff. And, like, my family were
nobody
all Irish.
Knows what my
and, like,
actual some people have. You know, nobody knows what my actual accent is.
You've never actually unveiled your Canadian accent on the air.
No, never. I never, ever, ever will. I have to, like, when we moved here from Canada in 1997, I spent my summer learning how to do this.
To become one of us.
I spent my summer asking people to say things and learning it because I felt so weird. I felt so different. Because I was the only kid at school who talked weird, so I had to learn it.
Talked weird.
Yeah, so when we moved to Scotland, so that was what I did, summer 1997. And I enjoy accents.
I really like all those regional distinctions, and I can even hear them now, like, in a lot of American accents, because we talk to a lot of Americans, and I can even hear a lot of the different regional distinctions depending on where they're from, and I really like that. I like really kind of regional dialects, and especially a lot of the unique words that sort of come with them.
Yeah,
well, America. Can you tell Ben and I, each of us, where we're from, or can you get anything from us?
No.
I can't tell specifically, no, I can't.
I'm so sorry.
I really can't.
I'm rubbish.
Well, Randy has that classic Northern Ozark sound in his voice. It's sort of a deep, slow rumbling and a very comfortable, gentle sound, as opposed to some of the true Southern, you know, the deep. Because Missouri, technically, from a point of view of the 1860s and the horrible unrest in America at the time, Missouri was considered part of the South, but it's technically not part of the South. It's kind of in the middle, almost in the center of America in general, but it's often...
Well,
Go ahead.
Missouri was a slave state.
Right.
And tried to secede from the Union. And then Abraham Lincoln basically came in and told the legislature that they were fired and put in a Union legislature who promptly stayed in the Union. All of it backed up by the troops. And very, very much from the because of all of the many, many German immigrants that were in St. Louis that took the Union side because they were just so grateful to be here. So I think that Missouri is more a Southern state, probably on the order of Kentucky, say.
The accent's very much like Kentucky. I think you would as Western, let's say Western Kentucky, because to my ear, Western Kentucky and Eastern Kentucky are as far different as Dan and Katie's accent is from ours.
Ah, yes.
Yes, they have a distinct Southern accent in Western Kentucky. I lived for a while in Lexington, Kentucky, and there was a, you know, it's not thick like Mississippi or Alabama, but it's a very clear Southern accent. Whereas when you get into Missouri, it's kind of a mixed bag.
I think Western Kentucky, much like parts of Virginia, has a sort of a cultured Southern accent as opposed to some of the more rough Southern accents that are there in the Old South. There was a very big distinction between slave owners and the regular poor white people who were just farmers or making a living or, you know, doing whatever they would do, whatever craft or trade that they had. There was a vast educational and cultural difference between the slave owners and all the other whites. So the accent of the non-slave slave-owning whites in the South was vastly different. You know, you get the foghorn leghorn sounding accent from the South that's very much the cultured Southern gentleman type, or the original Colonel Sanders, if anybody's old enough, well, I know Randy is, to actually remember the original Colonel Sanders and how he spoke. It was a very cultured, rounded Southern accent, as opposed to the new Colonel Sanders that's a kind of a cartoonish hillbilly kind of accent that they that they put on him. But that's just, you know, picky on my part, I suppose.
I think we forget as well how big America is, you know, because like the whole islands of Britain and Ireland, you know, like they're basically smaller than a lot of American states.
Yeah.
So like there's much room for, like you said, East and West Kentucky sound completely different. I mean, that's like...
But that's because enough room is between them.
And much more than our small islands.
Yeah, in our small island, it's all overall quite different.
When I moved to Kentucky, I went over and introduced myself to the lady next door, and she told me that her name was Mrs. Bale. And I said, what? She said, Mrs. Bale. I said, well, happy to meet you, Mrs. Bale. She goes, no, not Bale. Bale, you know, ding dong, ding dong.
Bale. I thought you meant a bale.
So I got it.
A bale.
Yeah, so did I.
That's
but anyway.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead with it.
Sorry. I was just going to say that's sort of the stereotypical Southern accent that we would probably hear on TV here. You know, that sort of stereotypical thing. But then in America, you'd probably get, you know, the stereotypical Scotsman kind of thing. So.
Yeah, but this wasn't stereotypical. This was real.
It was actual. It was real life. In real life.
You can be a real stereotype, believe me.
Believe me. I see stereotyping around daily.
Yes, well, we don't notice if we are one. I'm sure that everyone's accent seems perfectly fine to me. Everyone has an accent but me, is what I've noticed, except when they say Missouri instead of Missouri. And then I saw a movie the other night when everyone was referring to Illinois as Illinois.
Oh, goodness. I thought,
now that's inexcusable. So I said, people in Scotland even know that it's not Illinois.
Illinois,
right?
Yeah, we even call it that.
No.
It's interesting. Is Missouri just the way you say it?
Is that a local way to say it?
It sort of is, and actually not everyone in the state of Missouri pronounces it Missouri. That's more of a central and south Missouri pronunciation.
People here say Glasgow.
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 Or something like that. Is it like a kind of regional thing like that?
Same thing.
Name for it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, in Ohio, you can tell pretty obviously, you can tell from what part of Ohio a person is by having them say the word Cincinnati. If they say Cincinnati, then you know they're from the eastern or northern, if you draw a line through Cincinnati itself, eastern and northern parts of Cincinnati will call it Cincinnati. Western and southern parts of Cincinnati will call it Cincinnata. So it kind of has
same
that same
thing, isn't
Missouri.
It?
Yeah, yeah, same kind of a. And actually, if you go back to the Roman that it came from, Cincinnatus, so Cincinnata would be closer to the Roman word Cincinnatus than Cincinnati. So that's just a weird, you know.
Well, I think that disposes of that debate then.
I'm glad we talked about it. This. Yes. I'm glad that we settled it. Okay.
Ben, before we started on the air, you were also mentioning a bit of a, I don't know, is it a debate about some people wanting to write other people out of the liberty movement, or who would be in or who would be out, and what sort of agreement there is. I don't know if it would be a definitional thing, but is that something that you were going to say something more about? I can't remember what the point was again.
Yeah, I was just going to throw that out for everybody to kind of discuss, that, you know, there's so many people that call themselves libertarian and so many different groups that say that they're part of the liberty movement. And some of these people are just polar opposites from each other. They're, you know, famous Hollywood types that call themselves libertarian. And you look at the things they believe, they're outright socialist. They can't be taken as anything else. And yet, who is the guy who gets to draw the line and say, you know, who's the king of liberty? Who we get Ron Paul to go with a tape measure and decide who gets to call themselves libertarian? I mean, how do we determine this? You know,
I don't.
That's
know.
True because the term libertarian in many circles and circles that will have to be discussed after we come back from the market.
That's a teaser. Come back to find out the true definition.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Rustling about and digging up the carpet.
I'm Ben Stern. That's Randy England. We have Dane and
the Wampus Cat.
Dan and Katie Green. And we've been joined by Barney in the background. Hey Barney, how you doing?
Barney's here. He's scratching away, yes.
Some reason he likes to dig up the carpet. I'm not sure why.
Is Barney an animal? Is that why?
Yes, he's
talking?
Not a child. My goodness, yes.
He's our little Jack Russell for anyone who's not sure. He's not a child or anything. He's just
Please
a little
do not
Jack
call
Russell
social services. Yeah.
They let their
so he gets the wrong idea.
He could have been a cat too, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess.
They let their children
I'm
dig
well,
in the carpet
allergic,
over there.
Unfortunately.
I think we were talking about what are the brackets in which the term is it libertarian, or I don't know, start with that, I suppose. But I really think that even the people that might want to expand the definition of the word libertarian, it's still probably a lot more nailed down than say the term Republican or Democrat. You could be just anything and be those things. I think maybe you just need to maybe sign a piece of paper in some places or take a certain ballot to be a Republican or a Democrat or heaven forbid, you know, like a conservative or a liberal. Those are really, I think those could be anything. But a libertarian has got to do with liberty, right? I mean, yeah, on the political spectrum, you have liberty on one end and you have pure liberty on one end, statelessness, absolutely statelessness, and then an authoritarian, totalitarian, I suppose, on the other end. Does mm-hmm. that seem fair, Ben?
Yeah. And wherever you are in distance from one end to the other, with one end being ultimate freedom, the other end being ultimate totalitarian, and then the sliding scale of where you might be on that line.
And it's fair enough, I think, that if the pure libertarian is on the complete freedom end, and complete freedom, of course, only includes freedom to do things that don't, you know, involve force or fraud against your neighbor or anyone
else. Right.
Mm-hmm. I think the further you move from the end point, the less libertarian you are. And so if you want to talk about libertarians as a group, you perfectly well can say the libertarian, and then everyone else is libertarian leaning to one degree or another. Mm-hmm. But is it just a continuum where anybody from the midpoint over to total freedom can call themselves a libertarian? I don't know.
I mean, there's something I'm a bit interested in. I don't know. I think maybe some people think a bit much about what they call themselves. I don't know.
Yeah, because sometimes I would say
anarchist or anarchy kind of covers my thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's on the far end, right?
I suppose.
Oh, the far end of liberty. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, on, I like that, because that's on the extreme sort of.
Are you saying more? Where do people see themselves, Randy?
Well, yes, and but also that comes into a practical point where, you know, we think to get things largely, and how far out can someone be from anarchy? How far can you be from anarchy and still have much in common with the person who just wants to legalize marijuana? And I'm thinking that's an awful thin reed to make political alliances anyway with, you know, where you could agree on enough that you could work toward goals and things like that. One goal you could work toward.
I'm actually thinking, Randy, you sort of said it there with what you were saying, because you said, what's the difference between, like, say, like an anarchist and someone that wants to legalize marijuana? Well, there's the difference there, because, like, I wouldn't want to legalize marijuana and have it taxed in that. I would want it decriminalized, you know.
I don't want it to be any of the state's business. I just want people to be able to do whatever they want.
Yeah, just completely take it out of the state's hands. So suppose that kind of is the difference, isn't it?
Well, that is a difference. Yeah. Although, I don't think a pothead wants it to be taxed.
Of course. You're going to make it to the table.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
If it's all that's on the table. In Amsterdam, it's decriminalized. I know I'll be talking about Amsterdam all the time, but it is decriminalized.
It's a great example. It's an hour flight away from us. And it's definitely a good example of how it could work. But that's just one example, I suppose.
Yeah, they obviously
there's
have
a lot
problems,
more to liberty than Amsterdam.
I assume it's taxed over there.
Where?
In Amsterdam.
Amsterdam.
I think the shops and that are in their profits. But
I'm sure they are.
But it's a kind of, it's a sort of strange area.
It's not like you don't need a prescription, though. It's like just an item you go buy.
And it's that kind of way where you're allowed to, like, the way I understand it is it's a sort of gray area between the police and the coffee shops.
They don't
ask
questions.
Who their suppliers are and things. It's a really interesting, quite
a good
unique
model. Good model. We're going to go to the free market.
Yeah.
Have some fun. Talk about some weird stuff.
But we'll be right back.
Come back.
Yeah.
Gonna have a sandwich.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends. So we're talking about what is a libertarian, what's where the sliding scale goes, where you stop calling somebody a libertarian and start calling them authoritarian, and how do you, you know, who draws the line, where do you draw that line? I don't know. During the break, Randy and Dan and Katie inferred that I should drop in my opinion on it, and I don't know. I really don't know how to answer that, because there are people on, specifically people that are doing, you know, going to liberty events, going and making speeches and getting paid at different liberty organization, different liberty events to speak and so forth. And you stand there and you listen to them and you're like, dude, you don't have a clue. You're not even in the same ball field, much less the same game, you know. But how, but who's the authority? How do you stand up and say, you know, oh, that guy's wrong. That guy doesn't know what he's talking about, and confront them. If you do that, then you are instantly the bad guy. You're the guy saying, oh, it's an exclusive club that only Ben Stone can be a part of. But, you know, I don't want to do that either. I don't want to be that guy that, you know, is trying to draw the line and say who gets in and who gets out. But at some point...
No, you don't, but...
Go ahead, Randy.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm on my way to Porkfest this weekend. And I know they're going into anarcho-syndicalists there, and they're going to be people who say they believe in liberty and they're anarchists and they're capitalism, you know, after we get to a free society. And I'm thinking,
how's that work?
How's that work? And, you know, I mean, I would question a person like that very closely. And if they're deluded enough to think that in a truly free society there just simply won't be any capitalism, then I guess I'd be willing to just let them have their delusion. But when they go that far, I don't trust them anymore. I don't trust them that if they're so adamant there will be no capitalism, then I'm thinking they're going to make sure there's no capitalism, even if they have to commit violence against me and my lemonade stand. Now, that's an exaggeration, because they'd probably let you have a lemonade stand, but they wouldn't let you have a limited liability corporation, I'm sure, and, you know, lots of other things. They wouldn't let you have fractional reserve banking, perhaps.
Real estate if property, some of them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So many of those things. So I think the people that do bother me the most are the ones who call themselves anarchists, which means no rulers. And in my view, it means nobody can come in and use violence to stop me from doing something when I'm not hurting them. Those who say I'm an anarchist, and then right after that follow up and tell me about all of the things there absolutely will not be in their utopia, and those things just sound like things that can be accomplished without violence.
I just
don't get it.
I think part of the confusion comes in batting about words that people don't understand. So when we say capitalism, we're talking about a lemonade stand, where the person at the lemonade stand decides that, you know, he likes gold or silver or pieces of paper with dead presidents' pictures on them or whatever, and he's willing to sell his lemonade for some of these little pieces of paper with dead presidents on it. And a guy across the street has a taco stand, and he wants to sell tacos, and he's willing to accept little pieces of paper with pictures on it. And so that's capitalism. But when I'm trying to be polite here, when these other folks talk about capitalism in a negative form, the only thing in their mind is evil bankers with, you know, $300 million yachts that they're cruising around.
Corporatism.
Yeah, they have a completely different view, and they won't stop and understand that we have two vastly different definitions for the same word. And we're not saying that, you know, we want free trade, free capitalism, And they use the word free to mean somebody's given them something at the cost of somebody else. Mm-hmm. Whereas we're saying, no, we just don't want to be inhibited. We don't want to have a bunch of rules and laws, and you know, we don't want to have to pay bribes to some government official just to sell our lemonade. We want to be able to be as successful as we can be without having to pay extortion to some politician to function in life. And they don't see it like that. They see, oh, you're owning more than you can hold in your hands. You must be a bad person. And that, to me, that's just, I can't deal with people like that.
That's true. They wouldn't be against my lemonade stand, but they would be against it if I did well enough that I needed to hire an employee for wages. And then we would have a problem. I respect people that, and I believe the same thing, that working for wages for me is not preferable to working for myself. And I think it's probably, you know, in a broad sense, better, you know, to be an entrepreneur, to work for yourself. But I think there are just lots and lots of people that really prefer to work for wages and to work for someone else.
Right.
They don't have to have capital to start. They do not have to wait, you know, to defer gratification until, you know, everything gets done in that. They just go in, do their work, and get their paycheck at the end of the week. I have family members that very strongly feel that way, who have been, you know, entrepreneurs as opposed to working for wages, and much prefer the wage thing. You don't have the responsibility that you have,
and the risk.
And maybe your life is structured in a way that's the only way that's going to work to make you happy. Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine a society that would go against the people who want to live that way, and also the stricture against somebody like me who would want to hire an employee or more than one employee. And I get people, you know, you read things all the time on the left libertarian side of the spectrum that's bad-mouthing the wage labor. And I'm always looking very closely and saying, are you saying that you're going to somehow get rid of it through affirmative action, affirmative violence, I mean? Or are you just saying that when we get rid of the government, we'll get rid of all the things that are suppressing entrepreneurship? And I that's fine with me. I mean, I really like the idea that when we get rid of, you know, government subsidies to businesses and what, protective tariffs and too big to fail bailouts, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Eminent domain is something that big businesses use, that the power will shift away from big companies and will move in favor of the little guy who wants to open up his own business and that. And I really, really believe in that. I really like that. I much prefer the self-employment situation. But to impose that on the society that I live in, you know, that's just ridiculous. And I think it's evil. And I'm always looking for that, people that are so big a fan of getting rid of wages, wage labor. I'm wondering if you're a big enough fan to hurt people over it.
Yeah, I think the thing as well is what you're saying. Hans Hermann Hoppe did a good lecture on it. You can get it on Mises.org, and it was called What is Exploitation? Who Exploits Whom? And I used to be quite a socialist. I used to think that those dirty capitalists exploit the, you know, the hardworking laborers and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But then, like, he makes the point that if someone who you might call the capitalist goes into a venture with his own money, the people he hires are getting paid all through, and he's pouring his money into that. So if his product doesn't sell, the guys that worked have been getting paid every week, and he's not going to take their money off them, but he's taking the risk. And that's why he gets more, because it's like that whole thing of, if someone said to you, I mean, I can give you $100 now, or I can give you $500 in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. What are you going to take? You know,
well,
it's that.
Some people might say, well, I need that 100 now. You go, well, that's your situation. And some people can wait.
Yeah, exactly.
It comes down to the individual.
Yeah.
And what works for the individual. It was interesting, though, when you were talking about, just while we're talking sort of about employees and stuff, Dan mentioned something earlier about unions, We were going to talk about unions.
Yeah, Randy had suggested that actually as a topic.
I thought it was it is quite a good topic because it splits opinion a lot. I know it does divide opinion. And I think, you know, in the libertarian-y circles, I've heard unions being sort of bad-mouthed and things. And I think, what, you're looking at me funny.
No, I'm just
yeah, with a look on the face. Where are you going with this? I don't know. I'm throwing a jumping off point out. Yeah.
I think the balance... Go ahead, Randy.
Well, I was just going to say the reason that I mentioned that topic earlier is that I ran into an article that I read. It's a month or two old, at liberty.me called Let the Free Market Abolish the Unions. And it was kind of an analysis by a fellow named Jeff Peterson about, you know, what would happen to unions in a free society, whether unions would have a place. And there was also talking about, you know, what their place is in currently in our society, which is very, very distorted because of various acts of the government, probably the same way in the UK as here in the United States, I would guess. But the idea that I was kind of wanting to throw out was the title of the article, really, what would happen to unions in a trick. And Ben, I interrupted you there for a moment, so wherever you were going.
Oh yeah,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, I think it really boils down to voluntarism. Am I in voluntary association? So whether we're talking about employment, like you were talking with wage labor and that kind of a thing, or whether we're talking about a group of employees forming a union, really it has to come down to voluntary association. And I think the true libertarian position should always be leaning toward voluntary association and not towards forced association or forced disassociation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what, if you're going to make a rule or a law or whatever and enforce it upon people, you can't hire an employee or you can't work for a wage, then you're violating one of the basic principles of liberty. But if you're saying the same way around, if you're saying you have to associate with this person, we're going to force you to associate with them, then you're breaking the basic rules of liberty. So I think the balance is it a voluntary association? Is it a voluntary disassociation? And any interference on that, in my mind anyway, is evil.
Mm-hmm. And I like that. That's a good analysis.
We'll be right back. Stick with us.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends, and the brakes arrive like butterflies. They just flutter in on us right in the middle of a conversation. How rude. So, Randy, how about if I toss it over to you?
Well, Ben, we were talking before the break that the bottom line for any libertarian or any libertarian who's all the way over on the liberty end of things is going to have kind of this keystone test of whether a union should be allowed to exist. And the answer is, of course, as long as it's a voluntary association, that nobody should be forced to do it, nobody should be forced to not do it. And even people who think that there will be no unions in a free society still should not have any objection if some people wanted to get together and be a union if they wanted to. You've probably heard of right to work laws in the United States. I don't know about Ben and Katie. Mm-hmm. But About half the states in the union, this is a thing that's kind of a hot topic in my state right now because the legislature passed a right to work law, and I'm not sure if the governor has vetoed that yet or not. But when was the first federal labor law, big labor law passed? I think that was the Wagner Act back in the 30s with FDR. And there was a prohibition at that time against what they called right to work laws. The right to work law would mean that no worker could ever be forced to join the union in a business that had a union in it. And and from that standpoint, it sounds like a good thing. You know, nobody should be forced to belong to a union because in our opportunity to be here. But there it is. But anyway, you were not allowed to have a right to work law, and a right to work law is a law that prohibits an employer from making a contract with a union voluntarily that promises only to have union employees. So that kind of moves the whole discussion. Instead of forcing people to join the union, what a right to work law is makes illegal any contract where I, as an employer, promise to get all of my employees, you know, through the union, or all my employees would be members of the union or would become members of the union. And that kind of changes the picture between in voluntary association, wouldn't you say, Ben?
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got, let's say, I'll just lay it out like this. So you got Bill. Bill owns a machine shop. He's got 7 employees. And let's say that Bill really likes the idea of dealing with a union, because if he deals with a union, he doesn't have to deal with 7 different employees all wanting 7 different wages. So if he's got a union, then he's got 1 rep. He can talk to that rep, negotiate the wages for all 7 of his employees, and the whole thing is done all at once. He doesn't have the headache of dealing with all 7 of them. Now, that's just one side of the thing. But let's just say, I think I called him Bob, our machine shop owner. If he makes that deal with his existing employees, yes, if you guys want to work here, I want to have a union, you have to join the union to work for me. This is a private association, a voluntary association. There's no slavery involved. And if you don't want to work for the guy, go someplace else. And if you do want to work there, then join the union. And for the government to stick their nose in, it's unnecessarily burdening the private arrangement with an outside entity that brings violence into it. On the other hand, if Bob, the owner of the machine shop, doesn't want to have a union, we don't want to see, or at least I wouldn't want to see, a government coming in and saying, no, because somebody else somewhere else decided this, you have to only hire union people. But of course, like you're saying, Randy, that's not what that law is about. That law is really more about forcing the employer not to make that. Yeah, exactly. So they're sticking their nose in where
anyway,
they shouldn't be.
The Wagner Act back in the 30s did not allow you to have these right to work laws, which would override the desire of both the employer and the union that were making a union contract. But in you had World War II. You had this thing, and the first big act was in the 30s, and right on the heels of that came World War II. And during World War II, I mean, you know, there was so much flag waving, you know, you get poked in the eye if you didn't look out. And all the unions, it was just understood there was a strike, no strike promise by all unions, no strikes during the war. And that was the rule all the way up until 1945. And we'll come back in 1945 after the break then.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Anarchy in my primaries?
That's right. This year at Porcupine Freedom Festival, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Freedom's Phoenix, and Bitcoin Op Bombs have joined forces to bring you candidates that truly represent the depraved voting populace. Ready for gridlock? We are too. The Vote for Nobody primary will feature Megatron, Cthulhu, and Team Guillotine. Whatever your major malfunction, rest assured, there's a candidate for you. By us, who will never let you down. This is a primary that pays you for your well-wasted time through a coin-operated voting machine. With any luck, you'll get change you can collect. Primaries don't have to be boring, and you don't have to be bitter about broken promises. Don't settle for the lesser evil. Come by Vending Site 41 at Porkfest to pull the lever and gamble away your vote, just like the founders intended.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Hey, this is Randy England here with the Freedom Fiends. We're back in our second hour. I have Ben Stone from a location previously undisclosed. Perhaps that will come later. And also Dan and Katie Green in Scotland. And I think before we had the break, we were talking about unions. And I'm trying to pick up the train of thought, and I was the one that was speaking to my misfortune at the time, but talking about the fact that during World War II in the United States, there were no strikes because there was a no-strike promise made by all the unions because everyone was very patriotic, and we had to take care of the Japanese and the Germans who were being annoying at the time. But immediately after the war in 1945, 1946, you had massive strikes everywhere. All the pent-up strikes were happening everywhere right when everybody was wanting to buy a new car. And so the government swung in, and in 1947 passed the informal name was the Taft-Hartley Act, which went back to the Wagner Act of the 30s and took away all of the stuff that made the union so strong, had made them such a power, and threw a whole lot back to the businesses. And one of the things that the government did to rescue business was to say that the individual states in the United States all had the power to pass these what they called right to work laws, which were laws that would make it illegal for employers and unions to agree together that this would be a union shop, or some variations on that would be like, you don't have to belong to the union, but we're going to take the dues out of your paycheck anyway, and some things like that. And so the right to work, and since 1947 and the present day, about half of the states in the United States, mostly southern and western states, but not my state of Missouri until this year, have passed right-to-work laws, making it illegal for an employer to freely agree with the union to have a, I guess what you would call a union shop. And some people feel like it's really, really unfair. And everyone that's in favor of the right-to-work law and all of the rhetoric that I've been hearing in the last, you know, few months over this couches it, of course, in terms with the right of a worker not to be coerced into joining a union. And when you think of it from that point standpoint, it's kind of attractive. But it was interesting. I was reading an article by Walter Block, and he was taking the what I think is the libertarian position in that you should not have these right-to-work laws. Walter Block said, suppose woman A and man B agree to a monogamous relationship, marriage, he means. This means that woman A may not go to bed with man C. But what of the claim that this arrangement is a violation of man C's right to have a sexual relationship with woman A?
Of course.
Walter Block says this is silly. There's no such thing as a right to have intercourse with woman A or any other woman. And of course, his point is that nor is there any right for any individual worker to work for a particular employer. And I thought that was a, you know, pretty good explanation of that and, you know, put the lie to the propaganda that always comes out when they're passing these laws. And I don't know how I got off on the right to work thing, but only it's, I guess it's been in my mind because it's been in, you know, my newspapers and that sort of thing. But it's a, you know, it's always a big topic when it comes up, and you know, it must be controversial because it's taken now, you know, 7 years to get half of the states to go with these laws, and the other half is still out there. So who knows?
Yeah, I've been kind of conflicted by unions for a while because I work in a very, very heavily unionized place. And I've seen kind of the two ways that which it can work. You know, I've seen like the union representatives actually helping people who were being treated unfairly. But then I've seen the flip side of that. I've seen people that just don't want to work and basically want to do everything they can to basically take as much time off and things like that. And then the union back them up. So I've seen personally how it can work. It can work two ways.
Yeah, I've got another... So sorry, on you go.
No, I was going to ask if you belong to the union.
Do I? No comment.
Well, if you did belong to the union... Well, if you were... Let's put it this way. If you were deciding whether you wanted to belong to a union or the union or not, what would you... Why would you want to belong to the union? I think you just said, well, I've got somebody that'll stick up for me in a dispute with the boss, right?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, that's something. But for the most part, the biggest attraction to the union is to get more money. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't say that. Actually, see, if I'll just answer your question directly because some people in my work listen to this and we don't really talk about it, but I'm not in the union. Some people talk about it. I was for... Oh, I would say about 4 or 5 years, something like that. I was for quite a while, but yeah. I'm not currently. The reason why I kind of got out of the union, for example, was the fees kept going up, the dues, but they wouldn't tell you. And the fact that, I believe it's only recently, but they were giving our money, part of our money, to fund the Labour Party in this country.
Which is another stupid. And they didn't make it easy for you to opt out of it. They sent you a big...
It was only later they actually introduced that option.
They've actually sent out a thing and you had to send it back to them by post to say, I want to opt out of this.
Yeah.
So it was just terrible.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. But the thing is, like, they do, like you were mentioning about money, like I said, the dues kept going up and they wouldn't say to you, which was something that
See, I've got another thing. I've never worked at a place that was unionized. Never.
Never?
Never. I've never been part of a union. The only... kind of time I've ever sort of gone, I kind of wish we did have one. And then I kind of backtracked on it myself. I used to work at this place and one day it was incredibly cold and it was so cold. We could see our breaths in front of us. It was far too cold really to be doing anything, let alone working. And then a bunch of us were kind of complaining and I said, well, what can we actually do? Realistically, what could we do? Are we forming a union right now? You know, are we going to do this? Are we going to, you know, phone the boss and say it's too cold for us to do this, or are we just going to just get on with it and do it because people need their medicine, we need our jobs, let's just continue doing this. And it was uncomfortable. I'm not saying it was the most comfortable day's work I've ever done, but it was okay. I lived. So I'm just saying that's an example of, we didn't have a union. Yes, we all understood this was a horrible day and we said to our boss, please fix this as soon as possible. He said, yes, absolutely, put in, you know, temporary heaters and things. But whereas if we'd been heavily unionized, I could have gone into someone and gone, I'm not doing it, too cold.
I had a walkout.
Yep.
I was actually hungover one day and there was some dispute and they went, we're going to walk out, and I was hungover. Yeah, let's walk out. Yeah,
Dan was like 23. I just wanted to go home. he just wants to go back to bed. So no, but you know, I think that they can be used in both sides. Yeah.
But what, Dan, does the union, if you're not in the union, are the pay scales the same? Or are you in a position to negotiate separately for a different scale?
No, the pay is the exact same.
Pay is the exact same.
Yeah,
that's and ridiculous. And I wonder if the employer is free to if the employer just does that as a matter of his policy, or he would be free to pay anybody anything that he wanted. Say,
well, if I could make this clearer, I'm like a postman, so I work for Royal Mail. Royal Mail, a couple of years, well, roughly about 2 years ago, it made like a private company, so it was sold off. It was obviously government owned before that. So just now they're still under a universal license thing until, well, I think it's another year or so, and then things all change. So just now the union still has the place it had when it was like a public sector union, you know, like of a state-owned sort of place. But some people have said to me that they think that once this license thing runs off it, that the union will start to fall away a bit, and it will be more replaced by something else, more like an HR sort of thing. That's just kind of the rumors I've heard from, you know, people I've spoke to.
Well, you're sort of, I mean, if you get paid exactly the same as the union, then by definition, you get paid more than the union because because you're not paying dues, yeah. Right?
That's like a good point. I never thought about that, but that's a good point.
Yeah. I make £5.
Right now, everyone is resigning from the Royal Mail Union. And it's your fault.
Communication
Dan.
Workers Union.
You guys are going to have to move or something.
I know. Damn you, Randy.
No, damn really. Really, that's the point. One of the points of the article that I mentioned earlier, that by Jeff Peterson, I think one of the points that he made in his article was that he seemed like an intelligent guy. So when he said that, I think that I could do better than average work. I'll take his word for that. But he said if I'm a person of high productivity, I'd be crazy to join a union when I could go and negotiate for my own value to the employer, because I can always get more money. And I think his fallback was, and at the very least, I can avoid paying union dues if I tell the union to go jump in the lake. I'm not going to belong, because I can do better negotiating for myself if my productivity is above average. And the point also is that, and if your productivity is absolutely average, you still have no use for the union, because if you're average, well, then you can just get that average pay. But if you stay out of the union, you can still avoid paying dues. Mm-hmm. So you're still ahead. And his point, which I don't want to insult anybody, you know, but if you're on the low end of the productivity scale, you're the only one who will benefit from being in the union, because you're not worth much, and you can use the union to coerce a higher pay for you, who everyone knows are not worth it. And you're basically just slumming and bumming off everybody else.
The basic moral of the story is you're not worth it.
I didn't make anybody mad, I hope. That was what
he
said.
I'm just jesting.
That's what he said. To the Agora.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. We're talking about unions. It's not an official topic that we're doing today, but we're kicking around some thoughts about it. Even during the break, Randy had an interesting question. Let's explore that a little bit, because what Randy brought up was the possibility of work slowdowns or sort of a peer pressure against that one overproducer that comes in early and just does more than anybody else. And there's kind of a, I've seen that in my life, that there's kind of a, you know, a little bit of a crab mentality that says, hey, you know, you're pushing too hard, pull back a little bit, you're going to make the rest of us look bad, or, you know, we're all going to have to perform at your rate if you don't slow down a little bit. Is that kind of what you were talking about, Randy?
Well, yeah, I asked Dan if in his job, you know, if, or any other experience in union, if he ever, if there was ever this idea that, hey, you know, don't work so hard, you know, you're making me look bad, things like that, which would be something that would come out of the mouth of the people I was talking about, you know, before the break, the ones at the bottom third who are the least productive, who you know, in their mind, I mean, if, in their heart of hearts, if they're honest, they know they're being as productive as they can, and if more is demanded of them, they'll crash. And apparently this exists. I've seen it when I was in, you know, I was in the one union job that I worked in, you know, please don't go too fast. Now, it took a while. I had to learn what I was doing before I could possibly be more productive than anyone else. But, you know, you hear stories like, you know, in the post your office, maybe our post office, Dan, I don't want to get you in any more trouble. But, you know, you hear stories of, you know, overly productive workers, you know, during the holiday season, you know, start busting their behinds to get stuff done. But you'll get in trouble because if you work too hard, there'll be less overtime pay. And everybody knows you need to pay overtime during the holidays. And people, they're punished for being good workers. And I think that is just rampant in most union places, everywhere in this country and apparently everywhere else. And I mean, I don't, in one sense, I don't blame them. You know, it's kind of like the government agencies. They get to the end of their fiscal year and they see some money that's hasn't been spent yet. And they go, oh, we need to go out and spend all this money or we won't get the same amount of money next year. Mm-hmm. You don't want them raising the standards that you have to work against. And honestly, I want to do the best job I can, but I don't want them raising the standards either, I suppose. Maybe it'd make me look better if I could be above the standards next year instead of having the standards raised up to my level of productivity. But the ironic thing about that whole impulse to hold down productivity, you know, you're making us all look as that where there's a completely free market and everything is voluntary. I don't know if there would be unions or not. And that was the question I think that we originally started in. The title of the article I was looking at was Let the Free Market Abolish the Unions. And the writer of that was not demonstrating his hostility to unions, because the writer of the article also was totally adamant that they had every right to organize and be perfectly free to associate as a union and to try to collective bargain with employers. And so there's no idea at all. I think the libertarian traditional hostility to unions, because you see it a lot except in the left libertarians, grows more out of analyses that suggest that unions have no place, are no productive role in a free society, because they can't really help the workers, and in the end everything comes out in the wash and there's no purpose to it. But why, you know, live and let live. I mean, if you want to have a union and you want to try to make something of it, maybe you can. Maybe you come up with a new model for unions that actually is productive enough, increases productivity for not only your wages, but for the employer too, so that everybody's on the same page. But, and I'm wandering here, because the irony is that being opposed to increases in productivity is being opposed to the only thing that can actually give a real wage increase to the workers. I mean, in the end, they can keep raising their wages, but unless they raise their productivity, they will put their employer out of business. Does that make sense?
I understand that, yeah.
Yeah.
And you've just got to... you've got to find ways to raise productivity. You know, I was thinking, reading the article, and, you know, this guy was pretty adamant that he thought unions were going to be completely worthless in a free society, but let them try. And, you know, I was trying to think of you know, where they might be useful. And, I mean, I guess it could happen, but it's not going to happen now because we're about to go to the market. Worms.
But we'll be back.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
The Freedom Fiends are back from the market, and before we left, we were talking about unions and whether there would be a place for unions in a free market, in a stateless society, where there were no laws governing these free associations. Of course, there would be laws against beating people over the heads and trespassing and things like that, but none of the labor laws that we know now. And I think it's important that we maybe think about what good things that unions do or could do that would make them valuable enough that they could exist in a free market. Mm-hmm. And I know Katie, and I don't know if Dan does or not, had some ideas.
Yeah, Dan and I were talking.
It might be a useful thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be my father's daughter now. My dad's a union man, and I was always told when I was growing up that the union is there to protect the rights of the individual. Now, I've spoken to my dad on an occasion after, maybe more recently, and he actually says, well, a lot of the time people were maybe not doing their job so right, you know, but it was my job to protect them. That's what I was there to do. So I think that maybe there's some kind of place for something. I'm not saying it has to be a modern day union or maybe an HR department of some kind that could be just a go-between, a dispute resolution. But Dan, I know you've got some thoughts.
Randy, you were talking earlier about like slowdowns and work and things like that. And I know I've seen like there used to be a time, for example, in my office when people would come in early and put mail up, you know, to try and get themselves ahead of the day. And the union spoke to management and things. Oh, something like that. And they started it from two ways, you know. From one, it's sometimes like if someone wants to come in off their own back and do that, then why are you bothering them for that? So I get that part, but I also get the part of like the kind of union side where they're saying, well, it distorts the workday, and then management might expect a certain amount of work that if no one starts before their time off their own back is unrealistic to do, and it distorts the plan for the workday. So I can kind of understand it from both sides.
And it's the whole thing is as well, we're sort of theorizing about a free society, but the whole thing about a free society is that none of us know what that will look like.
Right.
We don't know if it's going to be the same job opportunities in a completely free market. You know, the things could dramatically change. If someone took the training wheels off and went, okay, go for it, go, and really let it happen. But we don't know what it's going to look like. So I think for us to theorize within a sort of where do unions fit in a free market, I don't know. I don't know where I fit in a free market. I don't know what I would do in a free market. I'm a little bit unsure about that. But it's exciting, though, to think about it. And I think there is a place for protecting the individual because people can always be compromised. and people can be taken. That happens even now.
Even within a union, though.
Even within a union, yes. Yeah. It can happen. People can be compromised. And that's why I feel that people like politicians, so people with power, with great power comes great responsibility. And a lot of people take advantage of that. And I don't think it's corporatism or capitalism or whatever. I think it's people. It's just greedy people.
So like,
and you're
going to
get that anywhere.
A union would not have to be necessarily between employer and and employees. It could be between union members and union bosses, so that you would have a union to protect you against the employee, and then there would be a sub-union inside the union that would protect you against the
It's a dream within a dream. And then we have a union against
to
them.
Protect
no,
you
I'm just kidding.
From those bosses.
You know, I had a... But
I need a union to protect me from my union.
I had a little bit of a thought on this.
Dear.
As I was, you know, coming into my own in the workforce, I began to, I spent a lot of time questioning old people in the workforce and getting as much information from them as possible. I did that for probably the first 10 years that I was on my own. And I came to the conclusion that there were three basic ways to succeed in the workforce. And two are more important than the third. The first one, first and foremost, is show up for work. If you're unpredictable, or if they can't rely on you to show up for work, then you immediately enter a category for the employer that they don't like you, because they can't depend on you being there. And it becomes a burden to your fellow workers, because they have to share your load, or somebody has to work overtime or something. So the number one rule was to consistently show up. The number two rule is don't steal anything. And the reason why don't steal anything is not as important as number one is because they can always make it more difficult to not steal stuff. That stuff they can put cameras, or they can watch, or whatever. But if you're not there, then they can't depend on you at all. So the number one rule is be there. The number two rule is don't steal anything. And the number three rule that I learned was only work slightly faster than the guys around you. Don't make them look bad, but don't let them outperform you either. And by doing that, I would always go into a job situation, and within a very short period of time, I would be on sort of the top of the heap and be the first one that's considered for advancement or into management or whatever. But that third one was by far a lesser rule than the first two. Now, I can kind of see where in a free society where there's no government involved and you don't have mandated days off and you can arrange that with the employer, you would need collective bargaining in the sense that if there are a lot of potential employees, you would need some kind of way to have an advantage against an employer who could fire 300 guys and hire 400 more tomorrow. So I can see where a union would come in handy there. But I think in a free society, the union would want to also be able to have some kind of influence back on the employees to say, look, this guy here is not coming to work 3 days a week. He's sloughing off, or, you know, he's stealing stuff and it makes us all look bad. It endangers the good, endangers the company itself by him stealing from the company. And so I could see where a union would need, outside of government influence, a good union would need the ability to self-discipline within the union. And actually, I would think a union under those circumstances would need the ability to go to an employer and say, look, we need to fire this guy. We need to fire him now. Not just protecting them blindly no matter what they do, but actually providing a service to the employer and the employees that the worst of the crew, the thieves, the really lazy ones, the ones who just maybe mentally can't keep up and should find a simpler job to do, I could see where a union could fit that role. I don't know how that could be arranged. I don't have all the perfect answers, but I can kind of see the theoretical framework where a union could adapt to that kind of thing. What do you guys think about that?
You know, I wonder if a union, you know, to make sure that to have unions exist in a free market, the union has to be of value. You know, I'm wondering if you had a contract between an employer and a union, and I'm sure this has to have been tried, and maybe someone knows something about it, but if the union pay scales had something tied to the profitability, or more correctly, I suppose, the productivity of the business, of the workers, if you worked harder, you could get paid more money. And that would really tie into the thing you just talked about of having the union itself police the people that are not doing their job. And all of the union people, instead of the bums telling the hard workers, hey, slow down, you're making me look bad, the hard workers would be telling the bums, hey, get to work or you're going to be gone. That would seem to be something that would benefit both workers who will work and employers. Surely there had been a union contract that was tied to profits or productivity.
I wonder, too, right? Along the same lines as that, I wonder if a union could exist that rather than hitting up all the union members for dues, if the union's pay were based upon the profitability of the company. So if the company went under, the union went under. But if the company profited, then the union would get like a cut of that profit. I wonder if something like that
could
develop.
Right. Well, unions always go under. Unions always go under when the company goes under.
Right.
In fact, it's the unions where you had a kind of a weak-spined company and an over-aggressive union that's put many companies out of business. Because they got concessions that put their company out of business. You know, the thing about sharing the profits and everything, that, of course, is this a centerpiece of cooperatives in all over the place. I mean I like the idea of cooperatives and that, and of course the workers also end up owning a piece of the company, and that's kind of a neat thing too. And I'd hope that we would see that sort of thing in a free market, but you're always going to see the wage labor where people are working for the employer who owns the business for all the reasons you talked about, Ben, the fact that they want their money now, they don't want to take the risk of not making any money, you know, if the venture doesn't work. So you're going to have that, but it really seems like the more you can tie the workers' fortunes to the company's fortunes, that's going to give everybody a dog in the fight. I kind of like that myself. I do that in every kind of business type thing that I'm involved in. I do something with somebody else. I've been tempted to set something up where I would try to work out that the other guy that I'm with would get, say, the smallest cut that he would be willing to accept in this venture that we're in. And every time I've come across this and thought about it a little bit, you know, first there's that bit of conscience that says, you know, do you really want to screw him out of the last penny? But usually what wins out is, do you really want to destroy his incentive for making this thing work?
Yeah.
And I go, no, I'm going to give him the big cut, or I'm going to give him the equal share, and he's going to work his behind off, and we're going to make this happen. And I have never been disappointed with that strategy.
Cool.
That sounds good. I wish more people would take it upon themselves to adopt that. That would probably...
But it's selfish, though. It's selfish. You think about it.
Yeah.
I maximize what I get out of the thing. I'd rather have 50%, you know, of $100 than 90% of nothing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That's
a good point.
I think we could mention as well, just it's kind of like on the topic, we sort of like, the problem with unions here is the political involvement that we're talking about in a free society. But the fact is, I mean, here the unions have been tied to the Labour Party, but they've been fighting with each other since day one.
It's not working.
No.
They've basically fallen apart, so that's what happened.
Government messes up everything.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you arms listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
We're coming back to try to make you feel good about everything we've been talking about. That's the idea of redemption in the third act, is to kind of wrap everything up, feel good about it, and send you off into your day so that you have a good day. So how are we going to do that, folks?
Well, during the break, Dan and Katie and Ben and I, we voted to form a union in the Freedom Fiends. And I was picked as spokesman to let Michael know that we now had the
our demands.
Yeah. Our demands.
And we didn't
we're not a tenetous group. No, union. We're doing union.
We didn't have time to come up with our list of demands. Although I did suggest that before we went into the last segment with the redemption in the third act, that we ought to have some idea of what we're going to talk about during this last 5 or 6 minutes. But I was shouted down, basically bullied by the other three, who said, no, yes. we don't have to have anything to talk about.
We don't need no stinking rules.
And then Ben, who at that point, I think I was actually fired as shop steward. He took over and said, no, we're going back. I'm going to lead us in, and everything will be fine.
We'll be fine, and here we are, and we're all fine.
So we're looking for a new Freedom Fiends Union president.
Yeah, you can
send in your applications.
You can send your...
Intergalactic Penny Studios to the suggestion box. And as long as we get there before Michael Dean does, they will not be burned.
So we're forming a union. It's a revolt. Join the fist.
Ben, before the show started, Ben, did you send the email to Michael giving him the password to jump in?
I did. I'm kind of surprised he hasn't dropped in.
Yeah.
I was beginning to think he hadn't sent it to him.
Midday. Lots of times he likes to sleep this time of day. He's like a cat.
So he doesn't find out about the union.
Yeah.
I think that the one thing that he should be working on with Fiend Phone, which is a marvelous software. But whenever one of the fiends calls in on Fiend Phone, there's a shout out. I don't know if it goes out over the air or not, but it goes, Fiend Phone. Phone, and everybody knows. You look over at your fiend phone and you can see who the new... Yes.
I'm just kidding. I was trying to make you think that was it.
That was. I did. I really was. You were good. That was a wonderful DJ Dean imitation.
Thank you.
But right on Fiend Phone. Everybody should download a copy of Fiend Phone so they know what nut I'm talking about.
It's much better than Skype for talking to people because there's no sort of bad delay. Yeah.
No, but you have to wear your headphones or you have echo. But that's one of the reasons it's so much better. It doesn't have echo cancellation. Yeah. And but you can see who's on. And as soon as Michael jumps on on Fiend Phone, you see him. He has no way of sneaking up.
Yeah, no, he can't. Yeah, he can't like sneak up.
Don't give him ideas. No,
I know. I was going to develop the invisible button where he can now be present.
He'll be on the phone to Derek Sloopy.
Going, how can we do this?
If Michael was sneaky, he would go to Derek and have a secret way of him getting onto Fiendphone without him appearing making the Fiendphone. And you know what?
It's called the Invisi button. I've just done it for him.
Stop helping him.
I know, I'm so sorry. I can't stop. It's like a disease.
Michael is a sneaky as they come, and so I can only conclude he has already done that. And hey, Michael, we know you're there. We know you're there. And
it's like the NSA. It's always they're always present. They're always around.
Should have known
listening.
Because the name that Michael has used on there in the past, he uses another name that I won't mention, but he began calling himself the Central Scrutinizer. Yeah. And I thought that was a reference, you know, like a joke at the government or anything, but it was code to those who were, you know, astute enough to know that he was listening.
That sounds ominous.
He's always there. It is ominous. Listening. He's like Santa Claus.
Listening. You know, he sees you when you're sleeping? That's just creepy.
Oh, no, I
don't. He knows when you're awake. Ha
ha. He sees you online. Like, he does. We sound like the kids in the classroom when the teacher steps out in the hall, you know?
Throwing wads of paper
at each
other.
What's happening. Guys, this has been very, very, very fun. Randy, Ben, thank you so much.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
It was
thank
a lot of fun.
For,
good
for
show.
Being on with me, too. Oh.
Thanks a lot, Randy.
Ben, always great to talk with you.
Yep, Worms. Same here, Randy.
Worm.
Folks, be sure and
see ya.
And get over to freedomfiends.com and download the actual copy of this. And listen to us every night. The Freedom Fiends are on every single night. Worms.
Listen to us from Porkfest starting.
Oh, yeah, Porkfest next week.
Yeah.
And they'll be doing live shows.
Sunday
I'm incredibly
night.
Jealous.
I'll be there Sunday night.
Sunday night you'll be there, Randy?
Yeah.
Enjoy.
The Freedom Fiends.